Hi, my name is Carol Lewis, and I am located in Houston, Texas, and I am going to be on StoryCorps today with Frederick Carlton Lewis, otherwise known as Carl Lewis, my big brother. I competed in 2 Olympic Games, but I was on 3 Olympic teams. I was on the 1980 Olympic team at 16 years of age, but we didn't go to Moscow, if you recall. Then I was on the Los Angeles Olympic Games in 1984, and then the Seoul Korea Olympic Games in 1988. Did not win a medal in any of those competitions, but I did win a bronze medal at the World Track and Field Championships in 1983. So my partner is?
And I'm Carl. Hi, I'm Carl. I'm the big brother, and I am 59 years old, charging towards 60, because it's going to be an exciting, I guess 60 years old, going to be exciting for me. And I competed in 4 Olympic Games, but I made 5 Olympic teams with Carol. Actually, Carol, I think, was one of the youngest members of the 1980 team that boycotted, and I was the youngest male on the entire Olympic team at 18 when I made it. So we were babies, but I also went to 84, 1988 in Seoul, 1992 in Barcelona, in 1996, where I ended everything at the ripe old age of 35 in Atlanta. Fortunately for me, I was able to get 9 gold medals and 1 silver, 4 in Los Angeles in 84, 2 golds and a silver in Seoul, 2 golds in Barcelona. And the last one, when I was the oldest person possibly in the entire stadium, and in Atlanta in the long jump. I guess the biggest thing I love about my Olympic experience is the travel and the fact that I was able to win 4 gold medals in one event 4 times in a row in the long jump.
Sorry, before you begin, I thought I heard a phone or an alarm going off in the background.
Me too. And I heard a door.
Oh, that was on my end, actually.
Okay, and my phone is off. So
okay, that's all. That's all I wanted to say. You guys can continue.
Okay, yeah, my phone is off. Okay, all right.
Carol. Well, I think that, you know, I think this is probably a little bit different than maybe some of the other StoryCorps that people have heard, because for us, growing up in a family together, we had 2 older brothers, and essentially speaking, our Olympic dream started a long time ago, because my mom was an athlete that competed at the Pan American Games in Argentina back in 1951. And Carl, do you remember when we first had our Olympic dream? Since you're so much older than me, it's only 2 years, actually.
Yeah, it's a big difference when you're young. You know, actually, I guess Olympic dream and Olympic knowledge are kind of 2 different parallel things that happened in our world. I remember seeing the first time I knew about track and field or Olympics or anything of that nature was seeing some things in the attic. My mother had this big mural of herself, someone had painted for her, of her hurdling. And we saw some medals and shoes and things like that all the time. And that was kind of what the experience was for us. Being in that environment, being in the attic and not knowing what the heck we were talking about. Hold on 1 second. I don't know what's going on with this. I'm sorry about that. Oh, God. This is not my morning. Can we pick that up from where Carol was? Yeah, Carol, let's pick it up from you again. I'm sorry about that.
Start over again?
Well, it's from your question.
Okay. As we look back, I think our dream is a little bit different, or our Olympic experience is a little bit different than a lot of people, because we started everything out together, raised in a family with a mom and dad, and then we had 2 older brothers. But Carl, do you remember when we first started thinking about the Olympic Games?
Well, I guess the best way to describe that is they're 2 parallel situations. One's about thinking about the Olympics in terms of competing, and one was about knowing about it at all. And the first experience I remember was seeing this mural in the attic that was painted about my mother hurdling and asking questions about what that was. And then, of course, seeing some medals and things and shoes and things like that, not understanding what that was about because we were such a young age, even before we started running. So that was the first experience, and then asking these questions and then getting, I guess, kind of coy answers. You remember, she wasn't like, oh, I did this and that. It was just kind of coy. Well, I used to run, and a lot of it was just kind of having to pry that information out of her.
Definitely. And it's really funny because, you know, we were always very athletic and my mom was a physical education teacher. My father taught like second grade, but we always had sports in our life. You know, my mother, remember mom, they started a track club in New Jersey when we were kids and we would go out there and we'd long jump. And that was our thing because I recall building sandcastles in the long jump pit. And that's when we tried to crash them. So I think that was our first experience with track and field. But I also remember we used to get a television every 4 years when Olympic Games came around. And we watch together as a family. And it was exciting to cheer for Team USA. I mean, at the time it wasn't called obviously Team USA, but we were always really interested in track and field. And that definitely was the thing that got us involved in track and field. But I think if you recall, our journeys was a little bit different.
Yeah, but I think that there also, we need to add some context to why we ended up getting in sports in track and field period. Because it also kind of shaped who I became later on in life. And the reason we had a track club, my parents started a track club, was because my mother in the 1960s, who was teaching and coaching sports, wanted a girls track team. Well, at the time, not many schools had it and they refused to put it in at our high school. So she went back year after year and asked for girls track for high school and they would not put it in. So being the enterprising person she was, because mom was a clear feminist.
Definitely.
got her degree in the 50s. Got her education, started working, was always fighting for women's rights.
And got her master's.
Yep, and women's equal opportunity. So when she said, let's start a track club, my father supported that mission. And they started it for girls, actually. And that was what Carol talked about, us building these sandcastles. And the whole thing is that because the club was not for us, it was for older girls. And we were both too young and, of course, boys. And that evolved. So in reality, if my mother didn't have a feminist mindset about empowering women, then we would not have even gotten into track and field at that level because it was not offered in our schools or in our community.
Well, you know, it's also interesting if I think back, you know, we did the same events. And when you're the youngest of, you know, I was running around after you guys, you, Cleve and Mac, and I was trying to keep up. And I think I did pretty well, if I should say so myself. But, you know, I think that actually made me a different person as well. You know, I did not think that I was one of the girls. I was one of the guys, but I did have some Barbies. I definitely had some Barbies and stuff. So I did have that little side. But generally speaking, I was a rockin' sock'em robot. And when they were ready to choose for the football team on the side of the thing, I was in there for wide receiver. And I wasn't chosen last. You know, I wasn't chosen last on the team.
Well, the thing is, too, is it's a little different. The context is different in the way sports are now. And to explain to young people, before we played a lot more outside, there were more pickup games. There were more events like that. We had all the sports. We had all the organized sports. But nowadays, it's dominated by organized sports, where in our day, most kids were introduced to sports through just community activities. And you just went out and said, friends came together and they said, let's just play a pickup game. And then it evolved into sports. And so the thing about track and field, you know, I played soccer, Carol played soccer. She swam, we swam, we did some gymnastics. My mother had a dance studio for a while. We did dance.
Played musical instruments.
Played musical instruments. I played baseball 1 year. It was a little bit too slow for me. So it was more about exposure. And even in track and field, we did all the events. And just, I don't think that I found long jumping and definitely not sprinting. It found me because it was the event that I ended up with. And what I liked the most was hurdling, actually. And then the long jumping was interesting. But we ended up in those events because that's where it was when we, I guess, started to grow and get a little bit faster. But it was definitely an evolution getting to where things ended up. And a lot of that came because we had the support to continue to do it, even when you're not very good at it. And I think that's, to me, the biggest message that every single Olympian for Team USA and every family and every parent, there's so many people that are there to support you. because you have a lot more time in your life early, especially when you're not very good or you're not that successful, or you had bad days, you came home, or someone had to sit out there for 9 freaking hours watching a track meet for you to run 2 races. I mean, that to me, that's what it's about. That's what I remember.
I also remember mom filming. My mom used to bring a camera.
Well, she didn't bring off it. Filming. Dad would bring it, and then sometimes she'd try to use it. It was a disaster.
She put the camera on us, and we'd look at it later, and it would start off with us in the starting blocks or something. And the next thing you know, you got the sky bouncing up and down because she forgot the camera was on, and we never saw anything.
Yeah, but it was a disaster.
I think our biggest change, Carl, don't you think, is going to the Junior Nationals in 1978.
I think the real change was actually going to our first age group nationals in Pasadena.
It was only boys.
Okay, well then, that was a way to show that we could travel, we could see new experiences. And I think that's really the thing that kind of created a context that the club and the kids could go places and do things and experience something else other than just right across the bridge into Philadelphia. And then that culminated really going through Junior Nationals in Indianapolis. And I think the biggest thing was, 1980. So it was 10 years after everyone joined the club. We had 3 people go to the Olympic trials, all teenagers, and 4 actually go to the Olympic trials.
Jim Gallagher.
And two people made the team. So, and of those four, 3 ended up making the Olympic team and getting medals making the Olympic team. So I think it was just an amazing process of just clawing through the beginning, figuring out, doing a club for the community, trying to create opportunity for girls. And then next thing you know, boys come, people come, and then you have kids making the Olympic team. And then ultimately kids going to college with scholarships, traveling the world. And I think that's really what the legacy of what the club did. It took a small town and just opened the world up to them.
Yep. You know, Willingboro was an example of, I think, USA in some instances. It was one of the first planned communities in the country, and it was a cool place to grow up. And I think that is one thing, like you mentioned, we remember all the different sports. There was football, basketball, baseball, swimming, diving, anything you can imagine for kids there. And it was an idyllic place to grow up. And you know, for us, I also think one of the big catalysts for us was when I got invited to the Olympic Training Center in 79, maybe. And I was invited to go with all the big long jumpers and stuff like that. And I remember getting there, and you didn't get invited. And I honestly, I don't remember if it was only girls or it was girls and boys. But I remember saying to myself, I've got to remember everything perfectly, so when I get back, I can tell Carl what I learned. And that was so important for me to get back and do that, because, you know, you were a late bloomer.
Yeah, it was. And like you mentioned earlier, the Indianapolis event was, I think, a pivotal event at the second level of what we're doing, because we'd never been to Junior Nationals. And I was a junior in high school. I just turned 17. And you guys were 15.
I was a freshman. No, I was 14 going on 15, I think.
Right. So that's right. Because it was you're right. Because it was in June. Mm-hmm. And so I was 16.
Yeah.
And you were 14. That's right. Yeah. And so this was an event where college freshmen went to. And so it was, it's hard to even articulate how amazing that was to even be able to go there and make the top 2. Make the junior national team, which we kind of knew what and understood what it was. And I ended up getting 3rd and just missing it. And Michelle Glover, who was with us, made the team in the 100 meters. And Carol won as a freshman in high school. She beat even the freshman in college. So that was kind of the first thing in the exposure to what you could do if you really performed. And so we didn't even think about anything before we went there other than just going. And next thing you know, you're like on your way to Russia, because that's what it was. And of course,
yeah, I didn't go.
We didn't get there. Yeah, you didn't go. And it's and And you didn't, right, you didn't go because there was no chaperone. And it, as you as an adult now, if you had a daughter, you'd make the same decision.
No, I wouldn't.
Absolutely.
I didn't go because you didn't make the team. And if you would have made the team, mom and dad would have let me go.
Right, because there was no chaperone. I'm going to tell you something. I would not let my 14-year-old daughter go on a trip unchaperoned with someone that I knew with college freshmen. It just wouldn't happen. Even today, I would not do that. So my granddaughter will not do that. So I understood what, you know, I know it was tough then, but I understood, especially now, more so what mom and dad did because they were looking out for that. You know, look, you went to college. You know what those college freshmen do.
Yeah. You know? But they have no shame. I was raised by three older brothers, and I would have socked someone in the eye if they'd have gotten near me.
Yeah, but you know, you can say that now, but not when you're 14.
Well, you know, I think it then moved on. You know, our same little group. Remember, we also had a dream of going to the Olympic trials. By then, you were at U of H. You were competing at U of H, and
I was my freshman year.
Michelle Glover and Kim Gallagher were representing Willingboro Track Club. And, you know, we, as three young girls, 15, 16 and 16, we went to the Olympic trials. I remember mom's little lecture and dad's little lecture. This is your first Olympic trials. You're supposed to do your best. The main thing here is to understand what the Olympic experience is about. You're competing with the best in the country and you go out there and do your best. It doesn't matter what place you get, as long as you do your best.
Well, everyone says that, and it's just hard work.
I know. But you know what? If you think about
And I think that what you have, it's hogwash. It's both. It's hogwash because it's like, it doesn't matter how you do your best. To me, leave that crap out. Just go out there and say, do your best and come home and do something you can be proud of and leave it at that. You know, all the, it doesn't really matter. I don't want to hear that. Even coaching out U of H, I tell the kids, run a race you're proud of. That's it. Leave it simple as that. If you're not proud of your race, well, then that's okay to be upset. But all the, you know, it's this and that. No, I don't care.
I think in some ways, I think back, they were kind of tempering our expectations because it was our first time competing really at the senior level and they didn't expect it. And so, you know, I went out there and said, okay, how you like me now? And I kicked that behind and I was on that Olympic team, you know.
It's also a thing you don't know. You just don't really know how you're going to react, especially at your age in that situation, because a year earlier, 2 years earlier, actually, you made the junior team, didn't go. And then the following year in 1979, there was no junior meet. We didn't go to junior. We went to senior nationals and I made the team and you didn't, remember? And so therefore, now it's 2 years. So now this is your next shot at making a team from, you know, 15, because you were a junior then, so you went from 14 to 16. Yeah. And so I think the way you talk, I mean, I totally agree. That's how you talk to a 16-year-old, a teenager. And in a lot of ways, especially girls, you know, and we can say, because girls are a little different, boys are crazy. And I think that it's important to continue to inspire girls and build their confidence at an age when so much of society is fighting and beating it down. That's just the reality of it. And I think that's another thing I think that our parents did a tremendous job of, not only building your confidence as a young woman, but also teaching us how to respect that. And I've always modeled what mom is a role model for how a person should act. And they taught us that you treat women a certain way, you act a certain way, you believe in them. And without them, they wouldn't be here, you know? Yeah. So I think that's what was so great about you, Michelle, and Kim, so young, out there believing in each other and in having people believe in you, but you really depended on each other. And
we did.
The fact that you guys did so well, not only at such a young age, I mean, you had been to an Olympic trials, made two national teams, traveled the world before you were all 17. And, you know, the only people that do that are gymnasts, you know, that's it. And Team USA especially. So you guys were amazing. And gymnasts weren't doing it then. That was 1980, 1970s. Yeah. gymnasts were older then. So you guys were really pioneers in sports for young girls. And I thought that they did a great job of the way they talked to you and allowed you guys to stay on point, to be successful, but also to grow up to be good women, you know, young women that are role models that are not, that didn't go off the kilter. So they did a great job.
Well, I guess if we think about it now, then we go from 80, we didn't go to Moscow. Then we move into 84 and it was, you know, it was a great Olympic Games. I mean, this was the Olympic Games that you were supposed to emulate Jesse Owens. And that was the big pressure going into that Games. Unfortunately, I sprained my ankle, if you recall, at the training camp in Santa Barbara that I never wanted to go to in the first place. Oh, sorry. I had to slip that in and ended up in ninth place, I think, at the Games that year. But that was your coming out party for sure. I mean, I'll never forget it, you know, and it was also a time when Dad was there. That was Dad's only Olympic Games. And that was extremely special as well to have Mom, Dad, Cleve and Mac were there. And it was so great that your first Olympics was in Los Angeles in the United States. And you, you know, showed everybody.
Yeah, that was a great time. I mean, first of all, because everyone was able to be there. Yeah. And I just remember a funny story. I rented a house over in right behind Man's Chinese Theater in LA. And so when you weren't there, because you spent a lot of time in the village. So I rented this house. It's like a 5-bedroom home. Friend of ours, Anna Campa Walden, you know, Narda Michael Walden, and he got a hotel around the corner, the Magic Hotel right around the corner. But Anna Campa stayed because she wanted to help my mother do things around the house, you know, cook and things like that. So we come in, I tell my parents, I put them in the master bedroom and Dad's like, no, you paid for it. I'm like, no, you stay there, it'd be weird. So I had one of the bedrooms and I remember telling Mom that we had someone that's there, they're gonna cook, they're gonna clean, they're gonna do all of this. And she got a little indignant about, what are you talking about? All this stuff. I brought you guys up here, I got you here, I did this, I did that all this time. And I'm cooking every single thing that you're going to eat here. I'm going to be there. That's my job. And then she had a pause, said, but you can keep that woman. It's cleaning. Okay. Well, we'll do that. And so Mom and Anna Campa actually cooked our meals every day. And it was just it was an interesting 8 days because I competed 7 out of 8 consecutive days. The buildup was amazing. All year, I was on the cover of a magazine, national magazine, for 9 consecutive months. Nonstop. So every grocery store, everything, because now they're not as much because the magazines are not as big, but it was just that whole process and then setting myself up saying I could do it and then going through the pressure of it and the media and everything in a time when branding wasn't even a word in sports, all that stuff going on and able to get it done and then just be relieved. And that was the thing I remember. It wasn't like I was so happy. I was just relieved it was over. But it was something that would have never happened had the Olympics been in another country. I just don't believe that. So being in LA was an amazing thing. And it's something I'll never forget. And when I moved to the Los Angeles area 15 years later, I did not go a single day without someone saying, man, I went to the Games. I remember you at the Games. I got a McDonald's burger because you won a gold medal from the Games. You know? So it was a nonstop. It was an amazing thing. So it took me a while to really understand the magnitude. And that's why I'm so, so, so excited that we're talking about our past experiences and what we're doing and what we've accomplished. But I'm so excited for Team USA in 2028. I'm turning somersaults. I've done everything. I'm doing everything I can to make sure that they have that great LA experience like we did.
And then I guess, you know, we're both looking forward to that because it'll be kind of full circle for us. And then we look at your last Olympic Games when you look at 96, where you won your last gold medal. And I think of that, we were both in so many in different spots. You were on the field and I was in the broadcast booth for that Olympic Games. And also, you know, Mom was there again, of course, our mainstay. And Mom was there, and wasn't Grandmom there a couple days?
I don't know if she was there, but you know, of course, we had cousins and everything else, and all of that. They were there with us.
So you know, that was a big experience because I'll never forget. And we're doing all this stuff with when we're doing all the things with the broadcast, they kept saying that, oh, if Carl doesn't win the gold medal, and I'm like, Carl's going to win the gold medal. And they're like, well, what'll happen if Carl doesn't? I said, you guys can say what you want, but Carl's going to win the gold medal. You know, I'm like, you're going to win the gold medal. And then the competition comes up and they're still saying, oh, I don't know. And so it was fun because I was calling races and keeping an eye out on you competing. And in the end, it was very much, I was very excited to be able to go back to Mr. Ebersol and say, I told you Carl was going to win the gold medal. So that was really exciting. And then I think for us as a family, you know, we started Olympic Legacy so many years before that, and you finished it up with a bang, and also in the United States. So that was really fun to, like you said, Mom was there. She was there at every Olympic Games. She was there at most of our competitions. And I know that if my dad would have still have been, if Dad would have still been alive, he would have been there too. And I know he was watching as well. And, you know, it's bittersweet. You know, you finish a great career and you can always think back at what happened and what could have been and what should have been. But, you know, we had a great career, both of us, even though mine didn't end up the way I would have liked to.
Well, I look at it. It ebbs and flows. And I look at Atlanta in an interesting way, because I would not have competed in the Olympics if it was not in the Atlanta. If it was somewhere in Europe or something, I would not have gone. I just did not have the strength,
I remember that,
anymore, desire to go somewhere for 6 and 8 weeks, train and do this. I just didn't have the desire. So Atlanta afforded me the opportunity to go to the Olympics at all. And then to get there and to go in with confidence, but not certainty, because you never really have that. And then almost getting in the first day, the qualifying day, getting down to the third jump when I was in 15th place, they only take 12 and it's one jump to go. And the whole stadium sitting there saying, what's he going to do? And sadly enough is that in my mind, it was like, you have 8 Olympic gold medals and a silver. And if you flame out today, that'll be the last story of your entire Olympic movement. It'll be like, well, he stayed around too long. He should have gotten out earlier. He just flamed. I mean, it's kind of weird, but that's the way it is.
Well, I think, let me interject one thing. I'm honestly glad it was in 96 and not now, because all this social media noise that drives me crazy all the time, that everybody's doing this all the time and always on that, would have been absolutely ridiculous.
Oh no, I hear you, but I'm the opposite. I wish it was now, man. No. I love the social media part. I think that, man, I would have been social media king, boy. And so I totally hear what you're saying, but I think that to me, I didn't feel like, now that I'm older, looking back on things like Atlanta, I didn't feel like I didn't have a voice, because I had so much to say, but it was always filtered in those days. And nowadays, and I would have loved all that. I mean, I in 96, being the oldest guy, which I knew I was going to be, I played the age they played thing up. It wasn't like a lot of people thought. I played it up. I mean, I was like, oh, I don't know if I can compete with these young kids. And I remember going into the drugstore and saying, is there anything that can enhance the gray in my hair? Because I had a little bit of gray. I want to enhance the
mini violin. I'm playing my mini violin. Yeah.
Well, no, but I'm just saying the whole point was that if this old guy, because that's the story. The story to me was this old guy's competing against these young kids. So I was played that up in terms of, that was part of the brand at the time. Well, I was branding myself in Atlanta. So I can't even imagine what it would have been like if I'd had social media through that era, of how I could have really told my story. And then the thing about it, Atlanta, Carol, what I remember is qualifying on that last jump.
Yeah.
And going from 15th to first.
Yeah.
And so when I went home that day, I really felt like, you know, these guys are going to be, they're going to go to bed tonight saying, you got to be kidding me. This guy did it again. I knew that I was getting free rent in their head overnight. So
they were saying, how in the hell did he do that?
Yeah. And then it's like, but we got to do it tomorrow. So my thing was, it was all, you can, you can psych people out without doing things and saying things. And I knew that they didn't want me to last jumper, because if you're in the lead in the finals, you become the last jumper. So that's why the third jump was so important. And I knew then when that happened, I said, you know, I just don't know if they can come back. I just felt like I had it. And then I did things like way in the back at the end of the runway. So they, you know, maybe 30 feet behind them. They couldn't see me. I wasn't around them, but they knew I was behind them, you know, just things like that. And each, I waited to the jump and I said, I'll pass this jump. So I got the lead, and then it became a head game.
People don't understand some of it, especially in the field events. People don't understand. It is a game. It is a game. It's a head game as well as a physical game. And sometimes in certain circumstances, your head is performing better than your body, but you pull them all together in the end, for sure.
I was just wondering, because you were just saying about some of those mind games, like, is it something you did every time you went to the Olympics? Like, were you always like doing your physical game and the mind games as well?
Yeah.
Can you talk to each other about that?
Every competition.
But see, my thing, I would do two things. Number one, it wasn't always directly at you. It would be things like if I was long jumping or sprinting, I would always run fast or jump far the first day.
No, that's
always
true. That was always fun.
I always did it. Said, I
trained. Get them on the first one.
Yeah, I always had this motto, win the heat, you win the meet. So I would always lay it down the first day, because I did a lot of studying. It was a lot harder then, but I knew every round how fast everyone had run. So my thing was, well, if the fastest guys run 10-2, then I'm gonna run 10-0. Or if they run 10-1, I wanna run 9-9. So that they go to bed tonight thinking, my God, I'm going to have to run my best just to do it. So they're thinking about me and I'm going to sleep. Or I would long jump 28 feet the first day and no one else had jumped 28. So they're like, okay, that's it. Or maybe Mike Powell. And so now all of a sudden, or Larry Myrick. So now all of a sudden, only two people are in the competition because everyone else just written it off from yesterday. And then you bam one early, and now they're thinking, oh, I've got to beat that. I get close to my best. So that was it. But I'll tell you something really interesting. If everyone goes back after they hear this, go back and watch, go on YouTube and our Olympic Committee website.
Olympic Channel.
And watch my winning jump in Atlanta. So I knew that I had to get into the lead. When I hit this big jump, and Carol, I know you remember.
Oh, this is so
I hit it. I came out of the pit. I went down to my knees, laid face first
on the track.
I knew I had a big jump because I watched it, and I hit it and I landed. I went to my knees, went to my face, and then of course the crowd went crazy. So then I went up, and that whole thing to my knees, that was all theatrics, because it was all theatrics for the other guys. But then when I got up and I put my hands on my head, that was genuine. And then I really felt I got it. And then I went straight to the crowd. So I didn't look at the athletes. I didn't celebrate. I went straight to the crowd. My hands were up looking because I wanted the entire stadium to rise because they were all cheering. I wanted to celebrate with them. But also I knew that that celebration was distracting those other guys. And, you know, after that jump, I think it was more than 90% of the jumps were negative or foul jumps. Only one person improved in the last 24 jumps. So, and one jump. So it just eliminated. It's just, I was all in their heads. Like I said, I had free rent in all their heads, just living in there. And that was things that we used to do.
It's the same thing I said all the time. Now when we're out there coaching the kids, I say, put a big one out there on the first one, because that takes the pressure off of you. And you tell them, now you come get me. Right. I am in the position. Now you have to perform better. And, you know, I think a lot of, you know, people don't even think about that stuff. They're so into themselves. You have to make your presence known. And we were taught that from kids. You know, and also one thing you have to be, and I was talking to a little kid the other day out at the tennis court, and I said, you have to be mean as a snake. I mean, you could be a nice person, but when you put on your uniform, your demeanor has to change. You have to be focused in. And That was one thing.
What did that
I will
look
say
like?
I was kind of mean.
Maybe Carl remembers what that looked like too.
Oh, I was mean. You know, the way I took my uniform off, I would always have, you know, one of the things in long jump, as you remember, Carl, we always had rituals, what we did in the beginning before every competition started and things like that. We always did the same thing because in the long jump, you're running 140 feet and you're hitting a 16 inch board. If everything's not the same, it'll never work. So I really think that, you know, that was extremely important as well.
Right, right. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I think that you build your confidence, and once you do that, and I always had a system where I have markers, and Carol's the same way. Marker, we used to go in and practice and make sure that we had our practice jumps or our approaches. And remember when we used to do that, if you had a good jump day, you knew I'm going to jump well Saturday or Friday. If you had a great breakdown on Monday, remember we used to always say, oh, the breakdown's great. I'm going to run fast on Saturday. So we all, you know, remember we used to always have these markers and I don't know if Coach Tellez meant that. I never even discussed that with him, but it was the end result of just having these markers during practice week to build your own confidence for the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. Sorry, Carl. I have a conference call in 1 minute.
I'll see if we can reschedule
another time or.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll end it on this part of it, or just talking about what an amazing time we had. I mean, I think that the best, it was a tale of two times. Our first Olympic team was in 1980, and we went to Europe and places, and I was a freshman in college and you were a junior in high school, and we were both teenagers. It was there was still a level of innocence to that because we were so young. And then after that, I decided that I wanted to be a millionaire. So my innocence was lost. The next thing you know, I was on a different mission. By 84, it was like it was a whole different world. But there is something to the innocence of those age group track meets when we were going there and you guys were competing. And I used to steal the chicken because I had more than I was supposed to have. And it was always cold, but it was still a part of the story. It was amazing. It was a wonderful time. And I look back only with fond memories. And I just can't believe that the little kids that started in the sandbox, playing in the sandbox, went to a cumulative 8 Olympic Games and won 10 medals. It just doesn't make any sense. And so just because we saw some big poster in the attic of my mother running over a hurdle.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. The